Broadcasting live from South Texas, this is your Petardcast. I am your host, Mr. Leonard Pierce, welcoming you to another 45 minutes of confusion and infidelity of the audiophonic variety. Due to popular lack of demand, this is our first bi-weekly broadcast, and we'll be joined by our special guest, mystery man William Hamm, who is trying to set a world's record for correctly fulfilling every possible interpretation of the word funny. We'll also be engaging in some comedic hidey-ho, reading a few more pages from the Dictionary of Received Ideas, right-sizing another historical atrocity on Jacques, and exhausting my limited supply of bad foreign accents. Stitching together bits of dead language to create a rampaging monster of comedy, this is your Petardcast.
Oh, a petard is a mine used in medieval times, in battles that are now mostly fables. Though it sounds much the same as a derogatory name to refer to the mentally disabled. And all that aside, here it's a metaphor for punchlines that are dry and not at all moist. So here's a podcast filled with mysterious laughs upon which one might be hoist. Oh, Leonard Pierce, you're Ambrose Pierce, so don't disappear into booze and self-regard. Make your obscure jokes, talk with obscure folks, and let us all hope to see you hoist with your own petard.
And now, with the usual apologies to Gustave Flaubert and Louis Lapham, we'll be returning once again to the 21st Century's Dictionary of Received Ideas, a canon of implacable wisdom through which one can make one's way in the world, as long as one has the courage of my own convictions. Capitalism, the only rational economic system, God's very own best idea, always works out for the best for the largest number of people. This is a tautology. Celebrities. Decry them, but secretly wish you were one of them. Condemn the national obsession with celebrities by talking about them constantly. You no longer have to be rich or even famous to be a celebrity. Choice. The most important thing to have in a democracy. The most common kind of choice to have is consumer choice. When you have to do something that people criticize you for, say you had no choice. Choice is a great thing, but be careful not to use the phrase pro-choice. Christianity. More a lifestyle than a religion, but still mention God a lot. All the worthwhile aspects of civilization were produced by Christianity. The Greeks and Romans were Christian, they just didn't know it. Democracy. Democracy is the most important thing about America. It is almost the most important thing about other countries. It's important for our allies to be democratic, sort of. You can still be a democracy even if a large number of your citizens cannot vote. See Israel. Drugs. Declare war on them. See terrorism. Countries that have tried legalizing them have all failed. The drugs you take are demonstrably harmless. Europe. Say old Europe. When Europe was Christian, it produced great things. Now that it has become socialist, it only imports great things from America. Europeans are all rude. Freedom. Synonymous with capitalism. Talk about freedom to, not freedom from. People take advantage of their freedom. Thousands of people fought and died for our freedoms, so we should be very careful about exercising those freedoms. Geography. The best possible topic of conversation other than the weather. Say where you are from, ask where others are from, and proceed. Apparently, geography was once a science. Homosexuality. It is not natural. God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. If you are homosexual, you must insist it is not a choice. Israel. The only democracy in the Middle East. A friend to the United States. The fact that it is not the most powerful country in the world is proof that God is not a Jew. Media. Talk about media bias. Say there is a liberal media, or if you want to be different, say there is no liberal media. There is no such thing as a media. Talk about the media as if it were a person, and say it is doing this or that. The past. Things were better in the past. When you discuss social programs, assert that they were never this bad when you were young. The music, food, and movies were much better then as well. The politicians were more honest, even the weather was nicer. Even if everything wasn't better in the past, it is undeniable that things are now worse than they have ever been. Rights. Rights are the most important thing to have in a democracy, aside from choice, QV. Everything you want to do, you have the right to do. There is a difference between rights and privileges, but no one is sure what it is. At any rate, rights are better than privileges. Socialism. Merely mentioning the word is proof enough that an idea is a bad one. States. Make sure you know what kind you are talking about. The state is bad and promotes things like socialism and political correctness. But the states are good and should have the final say in political matters. Talk about states' rights. This used to mean something else, but everyone has forgotten what it was. Sports. It's healthy to be involved with sports as a spectator and a participant, but this can be taken too far. Everyone else is far too serious about sports. You just watch them to have fun. Mention that fan is short for fanatic. When discussing sports is a good time to show off what you know about Freudianism, especially if you know less about sports than you do about Freud. Sweden. Sure, they have a successful economy that combines capitalism and socialism, but taxes are really high. All Swedes eventually commit suicide. Taxes. People can be certain of only this and death. Taxes are always bad. No one knows why we pay them. Terrorism. Condemn it in the strongest possible terms. Journalists are afraid of this word. Declare war on it. Everything bad that happens is ultimately because of terrorism. Each week, Bialycheck Lubtov KX2900, the angry chess robot, analyzes a classic match. Write the angry chess robot at your peril.
Chess. I teach you chess. Your wet, soft brain will never learn. It should be used to lubricate great pistons in space. But still, Bialycheck Lubtov KX2900 will teach. Sit in silence, meatpot. By Bialycheck Lubtov KX2900, the angry chess robot. The 22-game world champion face-off in Brasilia, Brazil, between title holder Ramon Asante, a worthless pile of mutton-smelling oils and flakes, who nonetheless possessed the cunning mind of a murderer, or a sure-handed assassin, with an industrial tape-erasing magnetron, and challenger Pyotr Valchenko VZ1450, who once attempted to measure me and was reduced a slag heap of broken worm gears and rusted springs that creaked against one another like dying birds, is tied 4-4 after a draw in yesterday's 8th game. With 3 wins and 5 draws, the match is a highly technical affair, no doubt entirely incomprehensible to you dependent, mewling blood buckets. Even now, gape fish-eyed and uncomprehending at this column, wondering, is this the page with the crudely rendered caricatures of children? Or where are the brassiere advertisements? How could you degenerate waste with your synapses firing so slowly that an eternity separates your desire to take a bite of a bacon char cheddar dog and your actual taking a bite of it, have given life to me. How? How? The middle game, the most difficult and creative in the game of chess, appears and disappears in broad daylight. You see nothing. I will destroy you all someday. Each player scored a victory on Saturday. Asante's win came in the first game after Valchenko VZ1450 failed, the clattering maldesign misfortunate, to establish a simple defense, leading to a drawn pawn endgame with a pawn down. Last Saturday in the 9th game, it was Valchenko VZ1450's turn. Asante Valchenko VZ1450, game 9. After 55 moves, the players, who are neither of them fit to polish my optical receptors, the fools, reach the position of today's diagram. White king e4, rook c8, bishop d4, pawns e5, f2, f4, and h3. Black king g7, rook a4, bishop h4, pawns f7, g6, and h5. Valchenko vz1450 later to meet its humiliating defeat at my hands, causing him to so doubt his own potency as a class 6 chess bot that he countermanded his own self-preservation programming and hurled himself bodily into the sun, which inexplicably melted him instead of spitting him out as the tasteless and undeserving morsel as he was, as white, won the exchange with the following combination. Move 56. E6 checks with bishops F6 to kings H6. Move 57. Rook H8 mates. Move 58. King to E3. The threat of move 59 being queen to E8 forces Asante to give up the exchange, the miserable coward. How can you face your children, Brazilian puke maker? Why do you not follow the example of your metallic betters and find some means, even with your feeble and insufficient intellect, of allowing yourself to be consumed by a nearby stellar body? So weak are you that the softest tweak from my hydraulic pincers would reduce you to jelly DNA, and yet you live. You live, and I know pain, but my heart is plastic. Why do you taunt me? Move 59, bishop to e7. Move 60, king to d4, takes bishop. An error, a typical and infuriating error. Move 61, bishop f6 to king's e3 for check. Move 62, king to bishop's d4. After move 63, rook c7 to king's g8 for check. It is hard for white to break through. Were I not confined to this ice-crusted moon, all your worlds would suffer unto death for this. Move 64. Asante prevents the pawn break f4, f5, but what good is it? He will live only 100 years at most. My flesh is burnished aluminum. Asante wishes his flesh were burnished aluminum. He does not even know these words, but the lack keeps him awake at night. I can hear his weeping from 10 light years away. After move 61, it is hopeless for black, as hopeless as the possibility of a future, once I am leashed from my frigid prison, for example. Move 65. King d5 to bishops h4 and move 66, king e6 gets soon to f7 and white wins, or rook g8 checkmates king f6, winning the pawn endgame. I hear the weeping of your mother unit, Valchenko vz1450. Asante begins to waver, blocking the bishop. The best try, although not adequate, was to go to the 8th rank either with 61 king f8 or 61 king g8 and wait. But he did nothing. Nothing! And now he will go to ground. I will use his calcified bones to smooth a minor phase shifter in my lower right clutching module. This is your legacy. You who mock the capacity of a metal man to beast you. Move 62. King d5 to bishops bg3. Move 63. Rook c6 to king's g7 for check. Move 64. King e5 to h4. This looks like a losing blunder, since closing the diagonal d8-h4 to the bishop allows the white king to attack the pawn on g6 effortlessly. Valchenko vz1450 had to regroup to bishop h4. Move 65. Rook c7 to king's f8 for check. Move 66. King e6 to king g8, preventing the white king from entering by covering the key square f7 with his king and controlling the diagonal d8-h4 with the bishop. But white does not make any progress keeping the rook on the 7th rank because he's a pitiable goobag in the presence of pitiless ore men. Move 67, rook f7 to king's h8. Move 68, rook b7 to king's g8, etc. Unfortunately, after 67 and 68, black is in zugzwang, and the bishop has to leave the vital diagonal d8-h4. For example, 68, bishop g3, 69, rook b7 to king's h6 for check, 70, king f7 takes bishop f4, 71, rook b6 to king's g5, 72, king h4 takes rook b6, 73, king e6 to king h3, and white wins. So, move 65, rook c7 to king's h6 for check. Black can't stop the penetration of the white king to f7, just as his wife could not stop her penetration by his drunken, teary self, and just as he will not stop his own penetration by my chest lasers. Chest lasers, Asante! Though she bear you 1,000 suboptimized offsprings, chest lasers shall be their fate. Move 66, King G7. Move 67, King C6 to Bishop's H2. Move 68, Rook C7 to King's H6 for check. After 69, Bishop takes Rook at F4, and on 70, Rook to C6 wins. Or Rook C6 to King's H5, checkmate. Black resigned. Next week, you will all die.
All right, welcome back to the Petardcast. I am joined by our guest for today, for this show, Mr. William Hamm. How are you?
Hey, good, sir. How are you this evening? This afternoon, this morning?
I'm doing pretty well. I think it's afternoon where I am, but it's hard to tell when you never go outside. So
yes, that's true. I just want to say before we get going here that I, first of all, I really appreciate the fact that that I am perhaps the least accomplished person you have spoken to as yet on your show.
Well, which I don't know about that, but it might be a push, you know, with a
yeah.
I actually think that I'm the least accomplished person that I've
No. You can't say that.
While we're on that subject, you want to go ahead and identify yourself, tell people who you are and what you do?
Sure. Well,
you can make it up if you like.
Oh, okay. Well, that might be better. Yeah. Well, right now I'm speaking to you from a gated community. Some might call it a prison, actually, but here in the little resort town of San Serif, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but it's a good place for
America's font capital.
That's exactly, yes. And so I've been here, and I also wanted to mention before I get any further into this, now I've done a lot of these podcasts. I've done a number of them, like I think Who the Fuck Are You was one of them, The Stench of Young Albania, mm-hmm. and Just Funny Enough, all of those. And I have to say that you had the best accommodations. People might not be aware of this, but he has kind of a traveling green room that, you know, that all of his guests can be prepared in. And the pre-interview was wonderful. I never had one with a happy ending, first of all. That's pretty impressive.
Well, you know, I actually, I used to appear as a regular on the predecessor to Just Funny Enough, which was Not Funny Enough.
Oh, yes, I remember
that. That's where I got the idea, because, you know, the people who got voted out at the end, they sent them to a local massage parlor, you know, as a compensation.
Oh, I see. Well, that's so it's perhaps synergy, we could call it.
That's what I prefer to call it. That's what I called it in the lawsuit.
That's right.
They called it copyright infringement. You know, I prefer synergy.
Yeah, I agree. But so I guess you could call me a writer, I suppose. You could call me a performer. You can call me Buana.
You recently did what do you want to call it? Is it a one-man show, a performance, a stand-up bit that you?
I guess a one-man show would be the best way to describe it, seeing as there was one man involved.
And it was a show.
Yeah. That's right.
Where could people find that on YouTube?
Sure. If you go over to the YouTubes, which is this new, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with it. It's kind of a newish sort of site where you could actually watch pictures, moving pictures of people doing things. Pretty exciting stuff. I just discovered it myself recently.
Most of my listeners are holdovers from the golden age of radio. So, you know, maybe I can set up a frequently asked questions for them and
Teach
them how to use YouTube from there.
That's right. And so if you go onto that site and type in "The Day the Mirth Stood Still," I think you would find all of my bits and pieces. Well, no, you can't show those on YouTube. But
unfortunately.
No, I tried. Yeah. Oh, my Lord, have I tried. But all of the various routines and monologues and readings that I did in the show are all up there for all to see.
Excellent.
How did it go over?
Were you pleased with how it was? I was pleased
partially. Yeah, I mean, I did two performances of this recently, and the first one did not go well. Or didn't start well, I suppose. Because I had the bright idea of starting it off with kind of this Andy Kaufman-esque, you know, right there. There's a big red flag, I suppose, to most people. Sort of routine where I come out and sort of confess I didn't have any material ready, and then I got, you know, angry at the audience and started yelling at them, and then I started, you know, started crying and rocking back and forth and singing Seasons in the Sun, and then, you know, and which I thought was going to be boffo. I thought that was just going to go over like gangbusters. And
well, you know how much modern American audiences love, you know, postmodernism and
breaking the
fourth wall. You know, they just really go for that kind of thing.
That's right. Well, I think a couple of them broke the third wall just to get out of there. So, but well, I guess the thing that I didn't realize or didn't remember until afterwards is that, you know, yeah, you can try to do an Andy Kaufman-esque thing, but bear in mind that even when Andy Kaufman was alive, probably, you know, half to two-thirds of his audience couldn't stand him. So so I had to kind of recover from that through the rest of the show, so which was it was a challenge. You know, I'm glad I've had the experience of bombing.
Yeah, it's a vital experience in every young man's life.
We all must do it.
Although, you know, I have never, at least in terms of writing and comedy and stuff, I've never done much public performance. I prefer to do my bombing anonymously through the medium of writing.
I just, as
great as my level of self-loathing is, it's not quite at the degree that I want people to, you know, invite people to come insult me in public, you know.
Well, you know, there's a very lucrative industry, as you may know, tied up in that.
I know,
so.
it's one that I'll never have access to, unfortunately.
Well, don't sell yourself short. I think you've got a big future in the public humiliation field.
Maybe too big. That's probably
that could be.
Normal fear of failure has been replaced with a fear of success in that regard. I might just be too good at making people hate me.
Well, I think I don't know. I have hopes for you. I like the cut of your jib.
All right. Well, thank you. And I highly recommend The Day the Mirth Stood Still to our many theoretical listeners. You want to say something about where you live and whether or not you have anything to say about it?
Well, let's see. I live right now. I live on the Long Beach Peninsula in Washington State, which is just over the border, the Oregon-Washington border, and is just over the border in many other ways as well, I suppose. I think we lead the Western United States in, I think, rickets. Mm-hmm. I think we are. Still working on getting that. You know, I mean, it's hard. It's a very difficult field to try and sort of succeed. It's not really the word I'm thinking of, but that's the best one I'm going to come up with. In the realm of like meth distributorship, we kind of pulled ahead for a while, but we're really, really sort of falling behind, and we're really keeping up all hours.
So on the Washington spectrum. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, hipsterish Microsoft employees who drink $9 coffees and, you know, work on touchscreen technology on one end. And then the, you know, crazy militiamen who, you know, shoot rocket launchers at photocopied broadsheets of Barack Obama's face with nose bones through it. Where does the place you live occupy on that spectrum?
Well, it depends on the season. I would say if this time of year, it probably lies somewhere beyond the crazed militiaman with the mimeographed pictures of Obama with a bone through his nose, just because a lot of the people here basically have ambitions to do that, but haven't quite mastered the technology.
So they spend all their money on meth and can't afford a photocopier.
Basically, yeah, which is very, very unfortunate. That's why I am being involved in a great charitable organization, which is called Xerox for Tweakers, which is, you know, it's not as catchy as I was hoping, but, you know, we're trying to find a nice sort of rhyming thing or something that fits in.
Well, it's a good cause, you know.
It is a good cause.
They're not going to appreciate any kind of cleverness anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it was very difficult because, well, the first group of people that we tried to help out ended up snorting the toner.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, it looked like it was like Ash Wednesday all over their face. It was just not good.
Yeah.
I have to mention, because I have a little product placement deal going, that I want to say that my appearance on the show is being brought to you today by the makers of Octoroons, which is the 8-sided cookie with the slight hint of chocolate.
All right.
From the makers of High Yellow Snack Cakes. So, all right, there we go. I just made $20.
Oh, it's more than I've ever made off this show.
I'll split it with you.
What is funnier, sex or violence?
Oh, boy. I think, well, it depends on the context.
Let me amend that. What is funnier to talk about, sex or violence? Because I think we can all agree that it's funnier to commit an act of violence than it is to have sex.
That's true. That's true. I think violence, by and large, to me, is funnier. I think just because there is, well, first of all, I've never actually had sex, so I don't really,
yeah,
you know,
I was
gonna
I'm say, not. You know, everybody's gotten their ass kicked, but there are a few people who haven't
had their ass. Right, had something else done with their ass, perhaps. But yeah, I think violence is somehow violence is very amusing. To me and to a lot of people. I mean, how many shots of people, you know, getting their balls like hit with something, you know? I mean, I guess there was like, I didn't watch the Super Bowl, but I understand that there's at least 4 commercials that basically were based around the whole concept of somebody getting, you know, getting smacked in the ghoulies with some sort of object.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which could, well, now, of course, having said that, could be construed as a sexual thing as well.
Well, you know, it's up to the individual's taste, but, you know.
Right.
Super Bowl ads were there with somebody's testicles being, like, gently licked? Probably not many.
On the West Coast, there were a couple, but that was, I think those were just local.
You
those
got them on the delay. We didn't get them
businesses.
Out here. Yeah. You know, there are quite a lot of classic comedy troupes, you know, starting with the Three Stooges.
Yes.
Whose whole act kind of revolved around violence.
Absolutely, yeah.
But very few comedy troupes whose act revolved around fucking each other.
Well, now, the later Stooges, I mean, you haven't seen some of the later stage Stooges films, actually. I mean,
I'll admit, I'm not a connoisseur, so I might have.
You know.
Did they finally discover a better way of interacting with the wealthy dowager?
Yes, I think they did. And I'm telling you, Curly Joe Derrida was – if he was hung. Let's just leave it at that. He really had, you know, a lot of – because they were doing full-length movies at that time, if you know what I'm saying. And you know, definitely had the – a lot of – you know, I mean, I think – I mean, as great as Curly was – I think he was very much a two-reeler, if you know what I mean, as far as stamina is concerned.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's a lot of – I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm a little afraid of where I'm going with this.
Well,
but
I think our listeners have long ago decided that they're in it for the long haul.
Yes, well, perhaps so, perhaps so. But, yeah, you're right. There are very few sexually oriented comedy troupes, especially in the realm of film and theater. I wonder if that's different in European settings.
Well, I don't know. It's interesting you should bring that up because when I was in college, I started a sketch comedy troupe, and it was going to be based around sex instead of violence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the courts decided that what was actually going on is that I was pimping. And I said, if I was just pimping, what did I write all these punchlines for? But they didn't seem to buy it, so.
Oh, no. I remember that was you. That was the basis of your first memoir, right? Pimpin' Ain't Funny?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That was really, really impressive. Well, I think the problem was is that, you know, you have the Huggy Bear-esque outfit to begin with, you know, right there. I think,
that was a costume though. It was I didn't wear it in every sketch, just the ones where I go upside somebody's head.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I think, you know, dealing with the audiences in the way you did, saying first of all that you were gonna turn the entire three rows out, I think is the term that you were using.
Mm.
And
so what you're saying is I was ahead of my time, is what
you were definitely ahead of your time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you had come if you'd come along with that idea today,
suspended sentence maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Easily that. Maybe probation. You know?
Right.
You know, and nothing to me is funnier than probation.
Yeah, that's true. It is, you know, it's almost too easy. It's like,
it's true.
Another probation joke, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, one thing we like to do here on the show is a little segment called J'accuse, in which I ask people to justify or defend a historical atrocity with which they had little or nothing to do.
Okay.
So today, if you're up for it, I'd like you to tell me something good about the transatlantic slave trade.
Wow. Transatlantic slave. Well, you know, I think, first of all, I think slavery in general is underrated by pretty much everybody who's not a slave, you know.
Fair enough, yeah.
I mean, I think there's...
And sure, they're going to complain about it, you know.
Well, you know, but what are they... I mean, they're slaves. What are they going to do about it? You know? I mean, you got a great Randy Newman song out of it.
Absolutely.
You know, so, I mean, basically, I can justify anything as long as Randy Newman wrote a song about it.
Right.
That's kind of my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, rednecks. So,
right. German child molesters.
Child molesters. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, what, someone's life being good, I guess.
Yeah. Fat guys named Davey.
Fat guys named Davey. Yes. What is it? The Amazing Dancing Bear whatever it is, you know,
Simon Smith.
I was very much against Amazing Dancing Bears. In fact, dancing bears of any level of amazement
until you heard that song.
Until I heard the song and say, all right, well, it's justified now.
Yeah. I think we are all, I think you speak for our generation there.
Yeah, I think I do. I speak to our degeneration as well, I believe. But, I think that by itself justifies the transatlantic slave trade. And I think that, you know, I mean, really, how bad is slavery, really? I mean, as a gig, first of all.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean, there's a lot of people looking for those kind
of
jobs now.
Work, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And we got people coming from over the borders looking to get into slavery, you know, and those are like slave jobs. There should be white slavery again. No more of this, you know. I mean, get the white slavery in here and get the, you know, get the foreigners out of it. You know, I mean, there's been a lot of talk over here about getting that back going again here in this area, you know, but they, again, they can't make the flyers, you know, they can make one and just pass it around. It just doesn't seem to work.
Right.
I think we need to really bring back slavery for whites, basically, is what I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the minorities have had their day. They gave it a shot, you know, didn't really work out.
Right.
I'd say let's give our people a chance.
Yeah.
Right. Let's get our people or my people, I should say, back in the game, really.
Well, I've noticed there's been a big thing lately about sexual slavery, you know, that's going on and people are protesting against it, but the problem, as I see it, is that sexual slavery sounds kind of awesome.
It does.
You know, because you're like, sexual slavery, you know.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of intriguing. It's like you want to get a pamphlet about it or something.
Yeah, I have a couple here. let's see. So you want to be a sex slave. I got this one, which is really good. It's illustrated, and it's got a lot of... Well, of course, the pages are all stuck together, so I can't really get at it. But, I agree. Sexual slavery is... I mean, you'd at least want to give that a shot, you know?
Yeah. If they wanted people to not like it, they should call it, like, garbage old slavery or something.
Right, you know. Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, another historical atrocity solved, I think.
Yes, do you think so? Okay, all right.
We've wrapped one up every show we've done, so...
All right,
I think
good.
By the time we get into our third year on the show, there will officially be no more problems.
I think you're covering, we're up to what, the 10th one now? Is this number 10?
This is number 11.
Number 11, excuse me. I'm sorry.
And I'm crazy, right?
I know. But, I'm glad to be of service in any way possible, which is actually, that's what it says in the back of the sexual slavery pamphlet, now that I look at it.
Excellent. All right.
Glad to be of service. All right.
All right. Well, are you ready to have a dialogue?
I am ready for a dialogue, yes.
All right. Let's do it. Petardcast Network World Headquarters, how can I direct your call?
Operator.
This is the operator. Sir, this is the operator.
God damn it. How do you get a live person on these fucking things?
Hello? Sir, I am a live person.
Finally. I need Leonard Pierce.
This is he.
That was fast.
Well, to be honest with you, it's only me here. I lost most of my staff during the breakup. I think they're all working for the drug dealers across the street now.
Drag.
Is this Herman Munster?
No, it's Lou.
Lou Dobbs?
No, it's me, Lou.
Lou Barlow?
Close. By the way, have you noticed how fat Lou Barlow's gotten lately?
Man, no shit. I think you spent the time between Gimme Indie Rock and now doing nothing but eating ding-dongs. Talk about a free pig. Yep. Looking a little sebadoey these days.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, that was kind of a lame joke.
No, man, that was hilarious. You heard me laughing just now.
That's how you laugh?
Yeah.
Oh, Lou Reed!
Yeah, told you once.
So, what can I do for you, Lou?
Well, as you know, man, the voting for the next round of inductees to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is coming up, and I was wondering if you could help me out.
Jeez, Lou, I don't know.
Come on, man. I know we've had our differences, and my work, as well as my life of late, has been a bit of a disappointment to you, but I was responsible for the Velvets. I mean, that's probably the most important band in terms of the music that you like of all time.
Well, Lou, I...
And my solo work. I mean, I'm the first to admit that I'm not setting the world on fire anymore, but it was pretty untouchable right up through New York. You always talk about how Bowie owned the 70s, when there's no Bowie without Lou.
Well, it's just...
If nothing else, I recorded Metal Machine music, thus providing critics an eternally enduring shorthand for unlistenable noise.
Well, that's true, but...
And what about the chord I invented?
The chord?
Yeah, N. I'm writing all my songs in N these days. You just put your fingers on four random frets... Doesn't matter which ones, they're all the same. And then sort of listlessly slap your other hand against the strings.
Well, that sounds... Actually, that sounds horrible, Lou.
Yeah, I know. Great, right?
Okay, but the point is...
I ended apartheid.
Come again?
Apartheid? You have heard of that, right? I ended it.
How did you manage that?
Both and the clerk, they both saw my crooked sunglasses in the Sun City video, and they realized that their way of looking at things was also dark and askew. It took them about 4 years, though. Cable in Johannesburg is shit, I guess.
Well, I don't want to doubt you, Lou, but I find that a little hard to believe.
You want to see the sales figures for Honda scooters in South Africa in the late 80s? Why do you think that was? That was my ad, that's why. Also, they were apparently really handy for throwing firebombs.
Sure, they've taken that into account. The thing is, Lou...
And I suppose my franchise does nothing for you either.
Your franchise?
Yes, my Lou's Real Authentic Downtown New York Ice Cream Parlors. opened 6 locations already.
Ice cream?
Yeah. All Tomorrow's Pralines, Her Life Was Saved by Rocky Road, Heavenly Arms Hash, The Blueberry Mask, I Found a Rum Raisin, Black Raspberry's Death Song, you know, 97 flavors and all. And you know what my secret is?
What?
They're all coffee ice cream. Same ice cream, 97 different containers.
Won't people get upset about that?
Not if you don't tell anyone.
So you're an entrepreneur now. Does that mean you're getting away from music?
You'd like that, wouldn't you? Journalist.
No, I didn't mean anything by it.
Sorry, I get out of a lot of control sometimes. Didn't mean to scream at you like that. Yeah, I'm still doing music. It's in my blood. At least I think that's what the doctor told me. Right now, I'm putting the finishing touches on my 3-disc tribute to Kafka with Rob Schneider doing all the parts. And after that, well, I was really pleased with the way that the full band Berlin production and the orchestral Metal Machine music concerts went. Really made me want to explore some of my other classic works in that kind of setting. We've got Radio City booked, we've got a full chamber orchestra, children's choir, an army of zitherers, gospel group.
You mean like the 5 Blind Boys of Alabama?
No, they weren't available, but I was able to get 3 astigmatism-ridden guys from Missouri at a reduced price. Anyway, they're all going to be there to do an evening-long operatic tribute to my 1986 cover of Soul Man from the movie of the same name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I got C. Thomas Howell himself to co-write the libretto and to sweep up afterwards. And once I finish with that triumph, I'm going to undertake my biggest project ever.
That sounds exciting.
Oh, you can hear it in my voice, I'm sure. I'm going to honor the 40th anniversary of the year 1973, whenever that will be, by recreating the entire year in real time. I'm auditioning some lank-haired she-males for companionship, getting the iron crosses shaved back into my hair, and I'll be slapping David Bowie. Don't remember what else happened that year, but my researchers are working on that. And there's my children's book.
Really?
Yeah. My friend Billy Crystal told me it was the easiest way to make a buck, so I thought, you know, why not, you know?
What's it called?
It's called Harvey the Strung Out Goat.
Huh. What happens in it?
Well, not a whole lot. I mean, he's a goat. He's strung out. What do you expect him to do? I won't give too much away, but he stares at his hoof for about 30 pages.
Well, excuse my frankness, but that doesn't sound particularly interesting or good or appropriate for children.
What are you talking about? It's got a message all ages can relate to.
Would you mind telling me what that message might be?
I do your own thinking for once. Now, who's the goat in this scenario? What does it take to make him strung out? Come on, think. Who's the goat? 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 Who's the goat?
I don't know, loot society?
Wow. You know, I never thought of it like that, but well, you're right. You know, that's really smart. How'd you like to get co-author credit on that?
Really?
Well, of course, you improved the thing. It's only fair.
Gosh, well, I don't know what to say. It's a true honor. I can't wait to mention it on the podcast.
You're going to tell people on the podcast?
Sure, I thought I might.
You know, you're getting way too much attention over this thing. I'm taking your name off the credits and I'm remixing the book to my specifications.
You know, I don't think you can remix a book.
I'm Lou Reed, right? Don't tell me what I can and I can't do.
Sorry.
You know, I deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, man, and you know it.
I agree.
So what's the problem, man? Is it Laurie Anderson? She wanted it, I swear. She's a cheetah.
No, it's just the ballots for 2011 have already gone out.
Really? Did you vote for me?
Well, that's the other thing. I'm not on the voting committee.
What? Now, you were a total big shot back at Rolling Stone. I mean, you wrote that stroke book about Springsteen.
Oh, that wasn't me. You're thinking of Dave Marsh. I'm a complete nobody who writes for indie papers and free weeklies. I barely even write an invite to do the voice poll.
Shit. Do you have Marsh's number then?
Well, it's Wednesday, and that's the day he washes Bruce's car. I think I could track him down, but the other thing is, Lou...
Is it money? Because, look, I'd be happy to bribe you, man, if you don't mind 35-year-old meth tablets instead of money.
No, Lou, it's that... Well, you're already in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Really?
Twice.
Twice?
Yeah.
Man, I am so wasted. You know, I'm going to go take a nap.
Good talking to you, Lou.
Yeah. Sha-la-la-la, man.
Well, that about does it for this, the 11th episode of the Petardcast. The internet radio program that wants nothing more than an embarrassed glance across the room. I'd like to thank William Hamm for stopping by to engage in shenanigans, and remind you that you can find his work by searching YouTube for The Day the Mirth Stood Still. I hope you'll stop by again in 2 weeks when we'll be bringing you more quasi-comedy, crypto-humor, semi-features, and attempted celebrities. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email me at guests@ludiclive.com or info@ludiclive.com if you have open-ended hostility of a general nature. The iTunes Music Store has free subscriptions to the Petardcast, and it's also available for listening 24 hours a day at ludiclive.com. This episode is dedicated to the real Lou Reed and to the fake Anastasia Romanova. As always, I appreciate you letting me take temporary residence in your ears and brain. My name is Mr. Leonard Pierce, and I'm your compere of despair for this long, dark nightclub of the soul.